This is Ukraine Calling, a weekly roundup of what's been happening in Ukraine with a focus on a main story. I'm Marta Dychok for Громадське радіо in Kyiv, and here are the stories that caught my attention this week.
Ну, ви, кстати, можете говорить на українському, я все розумію.
A well-known journalist in Ukraine has been killed by a car bomb in the capital Kiev. Pavel Sheremet was a host on Radio Vesti and worked for the news website Ukrainska Pravda.
Це справа нашої честі вжити всі заходи для того, щоб в найкоротші терміни цей злочин було розкрито.
Я буду общатися лично з експертами з групи ФПР. У нас є представники в Україні, у нас дуже тісне співробітництво з ним. І я буду лично вести справу.
Андрій Куликов was a long-time friend of Mr. Sheremet's. Mr. Куликов is a reporter with Public Radio Ukraine, and just yesterday he featured Mr. Sheremet on his program.
Journalist Pavel Sheremet was killed in a car bomb in the center of Kyiv as he was driving to work on Wednesday morning. At 7:45, he was on the corner of Хмельницького and Франко streets. That's just blocks away from Ukraine's Secret Service building. The bomb was triggered remotely. Street cameras captured the explosion on video. Ukraine's National Police Chief Katya Dekanyadze was on the scene almost immediately. She said that she would personally oversee the investigation. A few hours later, Ukraine's President Poroshenko called a meeting of the country's top security officials. Part of the meeting was televised. Poroshenko condemned the killing, said the perpetrators would be found, and that Ukraine was asking the FBI and other international agencies for help. Sheremet was 44 years old. He received international awards for his work, but was imprisoned and then exiled from his native Belarus for his reporting. He continued working in Russia, but by 2014 he found the censorship intolerable, so he headed for Ukraine. He found work at the internet publication Ukrainska Pravda and fell in love with the owner, Olena Pritula. He was driving her car when he was killed. Pavel gave what would be his last interview to Громадське радіо the day before he was killed. He said he was learning to speak Ukrainian.
Ви, кстати, можете говорити на українському, я все розумію.
Later in the show we'll bring you Андрій Куликов, who conducted the interview, Kennan Institute director Katerina Smahli, and publisher-entrepreneur David Nieland. We talk about who Sheremet was, why he was killed, and more. In other news, by-elections were held in 7 Ukrainian ridings on Sunday. 370 candidates competed for the seats that had been vacated by MPs who left for government positions, were stripped of their mandates, or died. Voter turnout was pretty low, 49.1%. Yulia Tymoshenko's Batyushchinna party gained 2 seats. So did parties affiliated with businessman Igor Kolomoisky. Civil society watchdog organization Opora said there were numerous violations during the campaign and on election day. Voting was stopped altogether in a riding in eastern Luhansk, which is close to the war zone. War continues in the Donbas. The intensity of shelling against Ukraine varied, and there were 2 days when there were no casualties. But over the past week, 9 soldiers were killed, 7 of them on Wednesday. 25 were wounded, 1 died as a result of his wounds, and 1 Ukrainian soldier was captured. As a result of continued attacks against Ukraine by weapons banned by the Minsk agreements, a 19-year-old civilian boy was killed near Andiyuka during the shelling on Wednesday.
Тож за минулу добу внаслідок
7 Ukrainian servicemen were killed and 14 were wounded.
Seabreeze 2016 began in the Black Sea this week. This is a joint naval exercise that Ukraine and the US co-host every summer since 1997. The exercise is meant to strengthen regional security by enhancing interoperability between regional and international partners. This year it's bigger than ever. 13 nations are participating, including the UK and Turkey. Over 2,000 personnel are involved. On Friday, U.S. guided missile destroyer USS Ross and dock landing ship USS Whidbey Island entered the Black Sea through the Bosphorus Strait. It connects the Mediterranean and the Black Seas. Images of the ships were all over Ukraine's media. The IMF will not be discussing Ukraine's loan in its July meeting, as had been anticipated. This is disappointing, but not critical. Ukraine's central bank reserves are fine for the moment, and no large debt repayments are due. Ukraine's political and economic elites now have a month before the next scheduled meeting. During that time, they need to do everything to meet the IMF conditionality. Otherwise, Ukraine will not be considered for the loan. Ukraine needs the IMF loan to safeguard bilateral loans, demonstrate its commitment to reforms, and maintain financial stability. Boryspil is Kyiv's international airport. It may soon have a new name. Ukraine's infrastructure ministry is getting into the renaming trend. It organized an online voting contest and asked Ukrainians which famous person they wanted on the country's main airport. The winner was 17th century Cossack leader Hetman Ivan Mazepa. Mazepa led Cossacks against the Russian Tsar Peter in 1709 in the Battle of Poltava. After that, the Russian Orthodox Church placed an anathema, a ban, on his name, and it remains in effect to this day. Byron immortalized Mazepa in his writings, and when Ukraine became independent, they put the Cossack leader on their 10 hryvnia banknote. To discuss the violent killing of journalist Pavel Sheremet, Ukraine Calling brings you in-depth commentary by a journalist who knew him, recorded his last interview, and two analysts. Ukraine hit the international headlines this week when journalist Pavlo Sheremet was killed in a car bomb in central Kyiv. And people here in Kyiv are still reeling from that. We have in studio with us today three people to look at what happened, why it happened, and what this means. Andriy Kulikov is a journalist. He is one of the founders of Hromadske Radio. He is the chairman of Hromadske Radio and knew Pavlo Sheremet personally. Katerina Smahli is the director of the Kenan Institute here in the Kyiv office. And Paul Nieland is a journalist, an entrepreneur, a publisher, a commentator. Thank you very much for coming in to talk about this rather difficult subject. I'd like to start with Mr. Kulikov. You knew Pavlo Sheremet as a colleague, as a friend, and you, along with Larisa Denisenko, did what turned out to be the very last interview Pavlo Sheremet ever gave, the day before he was killed. Andriy, you knew Pavlo Sheremet. Could you tell our listeners what Pavlo was like as a journalist, as a colleague? And in your opinion, why was he targeted? This was not a random act of terrorism. This was a targeted killing.
Pavlo, or Pavel, as the Belarusian form of his name is, was a very forthcoming person. He was the kind of person who did not like to hide his feelings and emotions, but he coped with them rather well when it came to his writings. And most of what he wrote was well substantiated and was not the splash of emotions, but rather an attempt to analyze what was going on. He was a person who came to Ukraine because he was first denied the right to properly work in his native Belarus, and then in Russia, where he went from Belarus. And I rarely saw a person who would come to Ukraine and so fully accept this country. And rarely have I seen a person who was so fully accepted by many, many people in the country. Although he stayed a citizen of Russia, I think that Pavlo lived a life of a Ukrainian, and tragically he died the death of a Ukrainian. Why he was targeted? Maybe because, well, first of all, he was rather well known. Well, I would not say that he enjoyed a nationwide popularity with every Ukrainian. No, but...
Well, I don't think any journalist, apart from very few, but...
Well, okay. But he was a person to whom many of the thinking strata would turn their attention. Not necessarily they liked what he wrote or what they heard. He was a very interesting radio personality, of course. And to kill such a person means to draw attention to what they intend to do. What they intended to do is another question. Whoever did this, I think the final aim was to scare or to intimidate Ukrainian journalists, apart from or simultaneously trying to further destabilize the situation in the country. And one more thing. To kill Pavlo Sheremet was very important because he was a success story. He was a success story, although he had to leave two countries because of his professional morale, because he wanted to find a free country. And you know, suddenly, after Belarus, after Russia, he finds a place for him in Ukraine, which strives to be democratic, and his life and work here was a proof that Ukraine at least wants to become a democratic country. So to kill such a person
is demonstrative.
Yeah, means to show, don't go here. They do not treat journalists properly. Ukraine is dangerous for decent people, basically.
Well, that actually leads me to what I wanted to ask Ms. Mahli about. You are a longtime observer, commentator on Ukrainian politics. What does the response of the Ukrainian authorities tell us about what's happening in Ukraine today? We saw the head of Ukraine's national police on the crime site almost immediately saying, I'm going to get to the bottom of this. Within hours of the killing, Ukraine's President Poroshenko is calling his top security advisors and in a televised statement saying, we condone this killing, we're going to get to the bottom of this, and I assign each of you personally to get your best people working on this. This is quite the contrast from 2000, when another journalist disappeared and his headless corpse appeared. What does the reaction of the Ukrainian authorities tell us about what's going on in this country?
Well, I think we can observe that there is both an internal and external context to this brutal murder. As you have noticed, the Ukrainian authorities tried to link this killing to the possible external influence on Ukraine, and that what President Poroshenko said, and that was kind of indirectly reconfirmed by Prosecutor General Lutsenko. To some extent, we can in fact see these parallels with the murder of Gengadze, because just as in 2000, Georgi disappeared, Ukraine was on a track record of success. You know, Ukraine had a lot of Western partners. Its relations with the West were on the rise. President Clinton visited this country three times in 94, 95, and then just 3 months before Georgi disappeared in June 2000. And clearly, our northern neighbors would probably not allow Ukraine to succeed, not allow Ukraine to tighten its bonds with NATO, with the European Union, and they needed to demonstrate once again that this is a criminal state where journalists are murdered, a failed state, basically. So today, when Ukraine is once again demonstrating that it is a successful country, full of promise and full of potential, when we just had a very successful visit by the Canadian Prime Minister Trudeau, when the free trade agreement with Canada was signed, when our Vice Prime Minister for European Integration, Klimpush Tsantsadze, announces that in September Ukraine may have the visa liberation regime with the European Union, Ukraine sends too many positive signals. Yes, we have a lot of problems that we publicly discuss, but still there is this promise of success. So there is a parallel, right, that you need to cut the success story short. The second parallel is that we need to create destabilization in Ukraine, some internal destabilization, because when Gengadze disappeared, the Ukraine without Kuchma movement started, and today this social upheaval, you know, there are some social motives which can push Ukrainians to fight against the Poroshenko government because of the rising utility tariffs, because people are dissatisfied with the slow pace of reforms. We already see that people and journalists who are now in parliament, like Sergei Le all associated with Ukrainska Pravda, they already founded a new movement. The Democratic Alliance had united with members of the Poroshenko bloc, and we saw the anti-corruption campaign led by Saakashvili. So yes, indeed, there is a growing opposition to Poroshenko government, and thus the murder of such a figure as Pavlo Sheremeta, who is a civil law husband of the founder and owner of Ukrainska Pravda, Olena Pritula, can again consolidate and make them push towards changes in this country stronger. And then finally...
Sorry to interrupt. Just to remind our listeners, Pavel Sheremet, thank you for the correction, was the journalist working for Ukrainska Pravda, which is that publication that was owned by Olena Pritula, and Serhii Leshenko, who you've just referred to, also came from that publication.
Yes, and I fully agree with Andriy Kulikov, who had used this term already, Ukraine is a failed state, and we could observe that a lot of Russian...
Sorry, Andriy did not say Ukraine is a failed state.
He indicated that the murder that the murder of Pavel Sheremet could be presented by some circles in Russia and Russian journalists as an indication that Ukraine is a failed state because journalists are killed here in the broad daylight. And by the way, a lot of Russian commentators and journalists have immediately jumped in, literally minutes after the murder, and started kind of using this narrative that, look, Ukraine is a country where the government is corrupt, where the government is not caring for its own people but is killing people in the east. It's a country where a journalist who once abandoned Russia and Belarus in a hope that he will find the free democratic Ukraine, basically his dreams had not been fulfilled because journalists are here being murdered. So we see this narrative, which serves as an indication that Russia and Russian secret services and Russia FSB agents, who, as we well know, are still present in this country, could indeed stand behind the murder.
But there's a lot of dissatisfaction within this country, and what you've referred to is the there hasn't been enough changed. That's coming also from within the country, and that leads me to what I wanted to ask Paul about. You this week published a very interesting piece in the Kyiv Post where you speculate what Ukraine would have been like had the Euromaidan revolution failed. Mm-hmm. And Yanukovych is still in power. This is Ukraine, so I'm leaving Ukraine. And you're really responding to that narrative that is so often repeated that nothing has changed. Everything is bad. Everything is getting worse. In view of what just happened, the killing of this journalist, would you change your view on the fact that things have actually changed in this country?
I'm not changing my view on that, but to carry on just for a moment talking about the murder of Pavel, one of the most important things that I've seen since that awful event is that straight away the authorities have said that they want to involve outside investigative authorities, the FBI and Europol. And that's the most important indication that this is not a murder that is going to be somehow covered up by the vested interests that exist in Ukraine. The fact that they're willing to open up, the fact that they're willing to say, you can say the same about MH17 as well, the fact that the Ukrainian authorities were willing to say, look, you deal with it, right? Because they know that they have little credibility themselves, and they have little credibility for lots of reasons, including what happened to Gongadze and so on. Another point that I wanted to come back on is something that you said, Andrei. You said that Pavel felt here Ukrainian. And I want you to know, and I want the people listening to the show to know as well, that that's not just because there was some kind of... there was a Slavic bond there, that he's Belarusian and then a Russian citizen and came here. And so, you know, it's all these Slavs together. But I know many people, European people, many Scandinavian people, people who have been here for a long time, who also very much feel that you know, they've bonded here and that they're a part now of this Ukrainian project going forward. And I'm a part of that. I've lived here for a long time. And I wrote the piece that you referred to, Marta, because I was standing on Saturday afternoon and I was challenged to do so by a friend. He said, you know, you write some serious stuff. Why don't you have a laugh? Why don't you do something, you know, will make people kind of stand up and pay attention and use that as the base? What if the revolution had failed? Where would we be today? The kind of repressions that we would be suffering today, the fact that we would still have, I joked in there about Sergei Kirchenko's 30th birthday, and, you know, for a man who was worth 7.4 billion, according to his own Forbes magazine, it's like they're gloating at us, right? So, you know, Kirchenko was this guy who came from nowhere. As a 27-year-old, within the space of 12 months, he'd amassed a fortune of $2.4 billion. And, you know, yes, there's a lot of people who are of the opinion Ukraine hasn't changed, nothing has changed. It's wrong. There are lots of people who are of the opinion, as you've just said there, Katya, that the reforms have been too slow. That's absolutely right. We haven't seen enough reform. There does need to be more. But if we hadn't succeeded on Maidan, things would be very, very different here. And
you've gone completely native.
Yes.
Say, if we haven't succeeded.
Yeah, no, but that's what I say. That's how I feel. And many of my friends say the same thing as well. I remember a comment from a Danish friend of mine on Facebook saying, you know, we are all a part of this. And I say we. I was at the site, actually, of Pavel Sheremet's murder, and I know you were there putting flowers down, and then a TV camera came over and was asking me what I thought, and I said, you know, как это может быть в наше красивое Киев? How is that possible in our beautiful Kiev? So, yes, I say ours. I'm Ukrainian.
I still think that by pointing so quickly and without any seeming doubt to Russia, our authorities try to sort of distract people's attention from the possibility that there still may be a Ukrainian part in this. When we speak about when we mention the murder of Georgi Gongadze in 2000, and we speak of Pavel Sheremet's death, do we remember how many journalists were killed in Ukraine over 25 years? 65, I was told today at the first national TV channel. 65. And I think that it would be absurd to say that all of them, or even most of them, were died because of outside interference. So
it would be absurd.
Yeah,
it would be absurd.
Before we cross the T's and dot the I's, or before the law enforcement bodies pronounce their verdict, I think we should keep our minds open, as they should, mm-hmm. to all the theories. And another thing which really troubles me, while many people say that this is a good sign, is the what Khatia Dekanoidze, the chief of the national police, said. She said the investigation of this case should be a matter of honor for us. Why?
It should be a matter of honor for every killing.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes.
I mean, this is a horrific killing. It's a targeted assassination, if you will. But every death needs to be investigated. And I'm just wondering what you think, all of you, what role journalism has to play in this. I mean, there's police that will be doing their investigation, but there's investigative journalism looking into various other things. Is there a role here to play for journalists? And you said journalists, this was perhaps meant to intimidate journalists, but perhaps this could be a way of invigorating journalists to do more investigative journalism, not just about offshore companies, but about all sorts of things.
I think that should be the response. I think the response from journalists should be not to be intimidated, to write more. And we don't know what Pavel was working on. We don't know whether there was some kind of big investigation, corruption investigation or something like that he was about to break. But I think that everybody that's putting information out into the public sphere should redetermine themselves that you know that they won't be intimidated and not to change the path that they're on. I mean, you mentioned earlier on it was a directed killing and it was a terrorist act. But it's like any other terrorist act. What do? You can't give in to the terrorists. You can't change your behavior. You can't succumb to what their demands are and to give up. What did Pavel do? He never gave up his morals, exactly as you said, Andrei, right? He never gave up his morals. He refused to, and we should do the same. We should do more.
Yes, I fully agree. And by the way, today, again, Canadian historian Taras Kuzin has published a very powerful piece where he kind of called on President Poroshenko to continue all the promises which had been given by ex-President Yushchenko in the Council of Europe, where he promised that the Gongadze case would be fully kind of disclosed and those who, not only who committed this crime, but also those who ordered this crime would be put to justice. Still, although the Ukrainian society and the international community kind of have the idea of who could have ordered this crime, those people are still around. They even participate in the Minsk process, and ex-President Yushchenko and current President Poroshenko, who at the time of Yushchenko served as the chief of Ukraine's National Security and Defense Council, they still are very silent about kind of opening all the details of that case. And that is why the parallels are there, and that is why Katya Gerchinskaya and other journalists who were colleagues with Pavla Sheremeta, they call on President Poroshenko and demand full transparency and open discussion with regard to how the authorities react these days to all this investigative journalism pieces which have been produced now en masse. We have so many investigative journalists in the country who produce TV shows, radio programs, publications almost daily.
And there's no accountability.
And there is no accountability.
Or not enough accountability,
There
perhaps.
Is not enough enforcement of the legal system simply doesn't work. So this is the key problem. And I remember that a week ago when the International Renaissance Foundation, this is a Soros Foundation in Ukraine, held a small expert meeting where Pavel Sheremeta was present, and Yevgeny Bystritsky, chairman of the foundation, has posted the words which Pavel said during this meeting, and he asked a few rhetorical questions.
What exactly
are we concerned about? Are we talking about clots blocking the reform process, or about the fact that it is necessary to extinguish the fire? Or are we scared to revenge of the opposition, the pro-Russian forces, of greater social radicalization? We must, as a society, understand what we are afraid of. So where is the enemy? Where is the enemy? Is it external or is it internal? And Pavel said that, in his opinion, the enemy was internal, because the enemy was injustice, this old system of corrupt politicians which still exist as a tight group who still cover for themselves and who block any real, not on the surface kind of reforms, you know, who would push the society towards real, honest debate about what kind of reforms we as a society expect. So he said that he saw no changes, he saw no real breakthroughs, and his last words were that what we see nowadays is that the old social consensus fell to its hands and knees, because there is a civil society in Ukraine, which we all know is very strong, but in addition to this 5% of civil activists who are still fighting very hard for the Euromaidan ideals, we have 95% of this country which has been tired of reforms, people who are not ready to stand up for their rights, and who basically see that in a country where there is so little justice, where the leading politicians themselves cover up for all the injustice. So what is the incentive for them to fight for this country and to defend the leaders, you know, whom they elected a few years ago on the so many sacrifices that had been already given?
Andrei, you wanted to jump in here.
Yeah, Katerina's mention of former President Yushchenko reminds me that some of the most famous criminal cases or whatever in Ukraine's history remain either non-investigated, or many people feel that they haven't been investigated to the bottom. The killing of Gongadze that Katerina mentioned is one of those where many people say that although the actual perpetrators were seized, the people who commissioned the killing are still undisclosed. And the alleged poisoning of Mr. Yushchenko when he was a presidential candidate is still an enigma for many, many people. MH17, and I fear that there is still a chance, a very sad chance, if this happens, that Pavel Sheremets' killing may go uninvestigated and unpunished.
Well, I think we can all hope that journalists contribute to that. There are many elements to an investigation. Paul, you had something you wanted to come in on.
Yeah, I mean, we're looking at old cases and we're looking at historical cases and the opportunities in the years since the Gongadze killing for people to bury evidence, for people to cover up what their roles are, or you know, for witnesses to be put out of commission. It's more difficult, obviously, to come up with some kind of answer there, although it's essential for such a high-profile case as Gongadze. But far more recently than that, and I wrote an article at the beginning of this year, and it was in the days in the wake of the resignation of the former economy minister. Mm-hmm. And shortly after Ivaras resigned, I think it was 2 days later, all of a sudden there was a breakthrough in the Euromaidan killings. And there was a picture there of President Poroshenko sitting with then Prosecutor General Shokin and the head of the SBU, and they said, we found the weapons. And then the SBU later on that day released photographs of the weapons. And
I think you should explain to listeners what SBU is.
Sorry,
it's not as well known as FSB.
Služba bezpečnosti Ukraine, the Ukrainian internal security forces. Yeah, thanks for pointing that out. So the Ukrainian security forces released these photographs of these weapons that they'd found. And when I saw these photographs, I rarely lose my temper, but I went mad because the photographs clearly showed leaves on the trees. Now, Ivaras resigned in January.
So
right?
They had the evidence
They had the evidence back in the summer, and they'd clearly sat on it waiting for a politically convenient moment when they needed to change the subject all of a sudden. So 2 days after what was, a very high-profile resignation, and it wasn't just the resignation, it was the reasons that Ivaras gave for his resignation as well in his resignation speech, which it was very, very brave. Right?
Remind our listeners what were the reasons for his resignation?
The reason why Ivaras resigned is because he claimed, and there's still an investigation ongoing here, I know he's spoken to the National Anti-Corruption Bureau of Ukraine about his allegations, he claimed that a certain Mr. Kononenko, a member of parliament and a person who's quite close to President Poroshenko, put pressure on him to appoint certain people to key positions in state-owned enterprises. And I think it was a key success that, the reformers of the previous government, as they were leaving, one of the last things that they managed to push through was to get several employees, foreign specialists, to come in to head up these certain state-owned enterprises. And it was a demonstration of, actually, no, you can't get away with that anymore. But for me, the investigation into what happened with the shootings on the 20th of February of 2014, when, there's video footage. There is video footage from behind the police lines, and we can see faces. We can see people who are not wearing masks, and the snipers were wearing masks. But a sniper, when they put on their gear and take their weapon, it's a very specialized weapon. They're very individualized weapons. We can see faces of who is behind police lines. I don't believe that we cannot identify those people. There's no record of who was around the presidential administration on Bankova Street on the 20th of February. That's just wrong. So, yes, there are many investigations, and maybe the historical ones, we stand less a chance of being able to come up with justice in those cases. But Maidan can't be messed with. Maidan can't be messed with. 100 people gave their lives, and again, the what if Yanukovych hadn't gone. The opening of that article that I wrote there said, the 100 people who gave their lives died in vain, and the last insult to their memory was when Institutskaya Street was reopened for traffic and the memorials to them were swept away. So I was writing that, but actually what I was talking about when I wrote the memorials being swept away, I was talking about the memorials to Boris Nemtsov up in Moscow. There was a few parallels in there with the situation with our people to the north. But the Maidan investigation has stalled, and it was deliberately manipulated, and that's unacceptable.
When I was listening to Paul, I thought we started with a killing of just one person.
And there's so many more.
And there are so many things that may be connected to it. And I think that both Katerina and Paul are very right in pointing out to the necessity of the involvement. And you, by the way, you said how journalists can sort of speed up or help the investigation. Many, many people should be involved in different way. Not messing with the proper investigation, but providing whatever kind of evidence they can. And on the day of the murder, there was a small rally to commemorate Pavel Sheremet on the Maidan. I think that 200 people who took part is absolutely insufficient. Well, there are reasons, of course. Many people still did not know. They worked, they were not paying attention to, even to the hottest and to the most tragic news. But this conversation will be put online on the day when in the downtown Kyiv, there will be another ceremony for saying farewell to Pavel Sheremet. And I strongly believe that many, many more people will come to this. Not a happy note, but it does provide
optimism. This is a horrific killing, and uncovering who did it and why it happened and the consequences is a story we will continue to follow. Thank you very much for your comments, your insight, and hope to see you again on Ukraine Calling. Those of you who've been listening to Ukraine Calling probably noticed something new at the beginning of the show. We now have a jingle. When I started putting together the show in early July, I was looking for some signature music to start the show with every week. So I reached out to one of my favorite Ukrainian musicians, Serhiy Fomenko, also known as Foma of the Mandra Group, and asked if he had something for me. Foma replied, "Yes, sure, I'll send you a few tracks." He's touring in the US, so it took a while for all of this to come together. But the song I selected is called Znovu den perechodit u nich, which means the day is once again turning into night. My wonderful sound engineer Andriy Izdrik has captured the fragment that you'll hear every week. But I thought you might like to hear the entire song, written by Foma back in 2007. Like all good music, it remains fresh. Thanks, Foma.
Запалити вогонь, подивитися в очі людей і відчути тепло їх долонь. Бери в руки сурму і багнет, бери прапор своєї землі, піднімайся нарешті з колін і скидай ці кайдани земні. Піднімайся нарешті з колін і скидай ці кайдани земні. Україно, 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 Україно. Бачиш, в небі палає зоря і чекає п'янкої весни. Богом благословенна земля, від біди захисти. Чуєш вітер великих подій, знов повіяв на нашій землі. Крок за кроком ламається лід, темну скелю б'ють каменярі. Крок за кроком ламається лід, темну скелю б'ють каменярі. Україно, 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 Україно. Знову день переходив у ніч, саме час запалити вогонь, подивитися в очі людей і відчути тепло їх долонь. Бери в руки сурму і багнет, бери прапор своєї землі, піднімайся нарешті з колін і скидай ці кайдани земні. Піднімайся нарешті з колін і скидай ці кайдани земні. Україно, 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 Україно. Україно, Україно, Україно.
Ukraine's parliament has started its summer recess, and the IMF has postponed discussing the Ukraine loan until August. But we will be watching to see how the investigation into journalist Pavel Sheremet's killing unfolds. Tune in next week for a new episode of Ukraine Calling. I'm Marta Dechok in Kyiv. Let me know what you think at mail@hromadskeradio.org. Thanks for listening.